Hyvää keskiviikkoa kaikille ja tervetuloa digitaaliset oppimisympäristöt seminaariin. Meillä on kaksi päivää tässä teemana digitaalisuus oppimisessa ja opetuksessa. Ja tarkoituksena on hyvin monista eri näkökulmista tarkastella tätä teemaa. Ensimmäinen tekninen ongelma. Noin. Ja me aloitamme tämän seminaarin niin, että minulla on ilo kutsua Jyväskylän yliopiston rehtori Matti Manninen pitämään meille avauspuheenvuoron. We are starting our seminar and I have the pleasure to invite our rector Matti Manninen to give us his opening speech. Welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, real dear guests, it's a pleasure for me to open this seminar. I'm happy to have, we have so many people who are interested in digital learning environments. A little, a few words about the University of Jyväskylä, which is always the responsibility of the rector when I open a seminar. Our profile is to be a multidisciplinary research university and Finland's leading expert in teaching and adult education and the major exporter of education. So this is one of the core fields of our university, what we are here now to put forward in this seminar. University has at the moment 7 faculties. Starting beginning of next year, we have only 6 because we are combining 2 other faculties to make it more, maybe working more effectively, the university. But if you look at our strategy of the university and our vision 2030, it says that the University of Jyväskylä is an internationally renowned multidisciplinary research university and one of the world's leading universities in fields of learning and teaching. So that's where we want to go. And our core, we have core fields and the 2 core fields, we have 5 of them, which are touching the topic of this seminar, is the learning, teaching and learning and growth environments that support development and information technology and the human in the knowledge society. So this combining these 2 core fields is again the topic of this seminar. So I'm happy that this is arranged here at this point when also the government of Finland puts lots of emphasis on digitalization of the not only teaching, learning, but the whole society. And we want to be in university one of the leading expert in this field, at least when it concerns to education. We look at the history of the University of Jyväskylä. It started 1963 as a Jyväskylä teacher seminar educating school teacher for basic schools. And the founder of the university, Uno Sungnös, was already then well ahead of his time. He had international experience and practically created the Finnish school system, which we didn't have before that, in the Finnish, using Finnish language. And so the whole basic school system started in this campus, so to say, in a school which had a different name. But since then, the University of Jyväskylä has been the leading expert in building school systems. And now, at the moment, we also export this knowledge all over the world. In 1934, the teacher seminary was changed to College of Education and became like a university status, and then the name was changed in 1966 to University of Jyväskylä. So this is the birthplace of the Finnish school system, which is still one of the best in the world. And now, in the when we go to digitalization, we want to be also the leading university in that in the next years to come. We have several units in the university which expertise is teaching and digitalization. Of course, in the information technology faculty, which is responsible to information technology, but also is one of the arrangers of this seminarium because of the digitalization. We have the research center for education, of course, the Faculty of Education. We have the biggest open university in Finland, which lots of the teaching is done remotely, so it's based on digitalization. We have a separate unit in Kokkola in the west coast of Finland, which the main effort there is also teacher education, and they have also part of the open university there, and they have mainly focusing on adult education, and because of that, many of the students are working, and they are also putting lots of effort in the digitalization of the education. So in many different units, and also, of course, in other faculties also, the digitalization in education is playing a bigger role. And every year we put separate funding for pedagogy of teachers and also digitalization of education. So that's where we are now. We also do collaboration with other universities, especially with the Aalto University in Helsinki, which is technical and business university. And they also put effort in digitalization of the university education, but they don't have expertise in pedagogy, which we have, so they wanted to have collaboration with us. So, in my opinion, also the pedagogical and cognitive aspects of the education, even especially when you go to digitalization, do something new, you want to study how does it affect and what's the best way to do it. So what I personally think important is when you go to digitalization of teaching, which I personally support very much, is to be innovative and don't be afraid of new trials, because the technology goes so fast forward that you can't do the changes based on very truthful research in pedagogy and so on, because it's too slow. So you have to have some trial and error experiments also. You have to listen to those people who are in background in information technology, have to listen to those who know about the pedagogical research and vice versa. And also, of course, you have to do research on that, including brain research. We have actually just invested lots of money for new equipment for brain research, which can be used also in educational purposes and are used in collaboration with the psychology department and educational faculty. And then again, aim high, and visitors help us to be the best university in 2030, which is our vision. With this word, I wish you a very fruitful seminar. Unfortunately, I don't have time to be here because I have other duties, but I hope you have a very successful day here, and the visitors, please take a walk through our campus, because we are very proud of our architects, which consists at least of three major architects. The most well-known is, of course, Alvar Aalto. We have more Alvar Aalto buildings than in any other university in Finland, and Jyväskylä has more Alvar Aalto buildings than any other city in the world. So welcome and enjoy.
Kiitos rehtorille. Thank you, rektor. En ollut riittävän nopea tuolta ennättääkseni kiitokseni sanomaan. Digitaaliset oppimisympäristöt -seminaari on siis alkanut. Meillä on pääkielenä suomen kieli, mutta tietyissä osuuksissa meillä on myös sitten englannin kieli ja etenkin tässä aloitussessiossa. Tämän seminaarin järjestää Jyväskylän yliopisto yhteistyöstä Keski-Suomen Osaava-hankkeen kanssa. Ja yliopistosta meillä on etenkin informaatioteknologian tiedekunta, koulutuksen tutkimuslaitos ja kasvatustieteiden tiedekunta ollut tässä järjestäjinä. Mutta me on iloksemme saatu tänne valtavan iso joukko eri alojen asiantuntijoita ja osaajia tämän seminaarin rakentamiseen. Ja näiden kahden päivän aikana huomaatte, kuinka paljon innostuneita esiintyjiä on lähtenyt mukaan suhteellisen lyhyelläkin aikajänteellä. Meillä on täällä taustalla Jyväskylän yliopistosta myös monia eri tutkimus- ja kehittämishankkeita. Yksi, joka tässä on keskeisesti mukana, on systeemiset oppimisratkaisut-hanke, joka on ollut tekeisrahoitteinen arvoverkkohanke ja joka on nyt tässä toukokuussa päättymässä. Ja minulla on ilo toivottaa tervetulleeksi tänne Tekesin edustajia. Pekka Ollikaisen löydän sieltä, Jari Räihä ja oliko Päivi Vestala, en ainakaan nyt, ei osu silmiini. Eli tervetuloa ja tervetuloa kaikille teille myös muille. Ja toivon, että jokainen saa oman äänensä kuuluviin näiden kahden päivän aikana. Ja meillä on 4 opiskelijaa, toimittajaa täällä mukana kiertämässä ja katsomassa ja kuulostelemassa teidän näkemyksenne ja ajatuksianne. Ja sanotteko lyhyesti nimenne, ja kun tapaatte näitä henkilöitä, niin mielellään kertokaa tuntemuksianne. Sanokaa.
Moi, Pietilä Iikka. Mitä muuta minun piti kertoa?
Oliko sulla se kognitiotiede sun oma alue?
Joo, kyllä vaan. Eli maisterivaiheessa kognitiotiedettä tietojenkäsittelytieteiden laitoksella.
Kiitos.
Moikka kaikki.
Kiitos. Ja sitten huomenna seminaarin loppupuolella kuulemme, että mitä olette saanut selville digitaalisuus oppimisessa ja opetuksessa -teemasta. Hanna taisi jo poistua. Viestintäseinästä, haluatko sinä vielä tässä sanoa meille ohjeistusta?
Hyvää iltapäivää. Neuvosen Pekka ja Prospektumilta. Täällä on käytössä viestiseinä, joka sopii tietysti tähän aihealueeseen kuin nenä päähän. Eli olkaa hyvä, osallistukaa päivien aikana aktiivisesti. Tuolta yläbannerista löytyy osoitteet, eli netissä viestiseinä.fi/smartedu, Twitterissä hashtagilla smartedu tai tekstarilla numero 12154 ja viestin alkuun smartedu. Ja pakko itse asiassa mainostaa sillä tavalla, että tässä salissa on tehty tutkimushanke agoralaisten toimesta, jossa on tutustuttu tämän tyyppiseen vuorovaikutukseen myös opetustilanteissa. Ja jos aihe kiinnostaa, sitten on kirjoitettu laadukkaat raportit yliopistoväen toimesta, että voitte tiedustella järjestäjiltä näistä. Kiitos.
Kiitos. Ja vielä minun nimeni on Marja Kankanranta ja olen tutkimusprofessorina täällä IT-tiedekunnassa ja koulutuksen tutkimuslaitoksella. Ja toimin tässä juontajana eri kohdissa tätä päivää. We did ask also some of those most youngest experts what they think about digitality or digital learning. Let's hear.
Mikä on siinä tärkeintä?
En mä ymmärrä edes sitä sanoa.
En tiedä.
Riittääkö sitä?
No. Digitaalisuus.
kirjoittaa ja kuvata ja sinne vaikka koodata tai jotain. Jos on jotain oppimispelejä, niin niistä oppii jo ainakin matikkaa.
Vanhemmilta asiantuntijoilta. Eri puolilta maailmaa miettimään sitä, että mitä se on se koulun muuttaminen, ja etenkin silloin, kun on digitaalisuus mukana opetuksessa ja oppimisessa. Ja mä annoin myös meidän opiskelijatoimittajille tämän samat teemat, joita he voisivat tässä kahden päivän aikana katsoa, että toisaalta mitä ne on ne lähiaikojen haasteet, mitkä on semmoisia haasteita, joita voi suhteellisen helposti ratkaista, mitkä on hieman vaikeampia haasteita ja mitkä on sitten hyvin vaativia haasteita. Toisaalta nämä asiantuntijat miettivät, että mitä ne on ne lähiajan trendit ja mitkä on sitten vähän pidemmän ajan trendejä. Ja toisaalta kolmantena ulottuvuutena, että millä vauhdilla tai mihin tahtiin teknologiaa heidän mielestään ja minkälaista teknologiaa otetaan käyttöön opetuksessa lyhyellä aikavälillä ja toisaalta taas sitten pitkällä aikavälillä. Nämä teemat, joita tähän on noussut trendeiksi ja haasteiksi, on viime vuodelta. Ja tietenkin tässä vuosittain saattaa myös näillä asiantuntijoilla tulla hieman muutosta näihin. Mutta lähdetään tässä kohtaan kuuntelemaan, mitä eri puolella maailmaa meidän vieraidemme ja meidän asiantuntijoidemme näkökulmasta tässä digitaalisuudessa, tai mitkä heidän omassa tutkimustyössään on semmoisia keskeisimpiä teemoja tällä hetkellä. And now I would like to invite our dear guests to discuss with us what in your countries and in your mind, in your research, are the most crucial issues you are looking at today when you think about digitalization in learning around the globe. And I would like also to invite Päivi a little bit. Tuutko tänne alemmaksi? It was not a surprise. Saat niin kuin tätä sovitaan, jos mä en ehtinyt sun kanssa etukäteen. So, our theme for the rest of this session is digitalization in learning around the globe. And I know that you have been preparing your thoughts related to your work, your research, what you are doing currently in your own universities. And the idea is that you have no more than 10 minutes to give your perspectives and ideas here. And then, of course, I hope you are available in our EduFest also to continue discussions and to with our audience. We hope that also during this session you can send your questions and comments to our viestiseinä. We don't have a lot of time for discussion in this session, but maybe if I could ask you to also to see what kind of questions and comments there are, and we proceed in that way that there will be 3 presentations and then we have short break for comments or discussions and then we continue. Is that clear? And if you, when you have your, when you're about 10 minutes, you can do it here or here. And then if you want to see what others are having in their slides, you can go back there, but it's okay, you can come here. It's up to you. And we'll start with South Korea. So this is the order. And I don't go back to this order, this slide again. So if you just try to count when it's your turn, but we have these slides as well. But okay. I would like to invite Dr. Okwa Lee from Sanbuk National University from South Korea. Please. And do you prefer?
Yes, I would like to. So my presentation material is here.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Test.
Yeah. Okay. I have a teacher's voice, so without this microphone, so I can speak loud. hey. My Finnish friends, and I learned hey hey means goodbye. If Finnish is this easy, I can learn Finnish by next year. the topic that I will talk about, the digitalization in Korea in education, has 3. One is the computational thinking, and the digital textbook, and a free semester. Now, the computational thinking. I guess a lot of countries in the world are very keen to introduce the concept of computational thinking to K-12 and higher education, as well as the adult learning. So that Korean government also focused on how we introduce the computational thinking to K-12 level well. So the curriculum has been changed, and there are 2 ways that the computational thinking was embedded in curriculum. The first is integrated approach, and the second approach is information education as a subject, independent subject, as a compulsory subject from 2018. Now, the integrated approach means the topic of computational thinking is embedded in various subjects. And independent topic, information education, is an information as a subject which is taught at the junior middle school as a separate subject. So the all the school junior high school students will learn the algorithm, the problem-solving skills, and the coding skills through this subject. Now, we have pilot schools for doing this. There are various supports for this computational thinking approach from industries, ministries, and communities. Industries means like, you know, Samsung. Samsung support this approach quite well. So they do not only donate money and devices, but also they donate their staff to go to school and teach computational thinking. And also the ministries, Ministry of Education and Ministry of Industries, Communications, they all got together and support this approach. And the communities means the professionals from various communities get together and support this approach. so that we solve the problem of shortage of trained teachers. So right now, 2014, we started pilot schools, and this year we have 900 pilot schools, and from 2018, all the schools will teach computational thinking. So we need a big support from the communities because we can't train teachers within 1 or 2 years to be sufficient enough to teach computational thinking well. Not only the staff members to teach computational thinking are required, also the instructional materials are very in need. So the instructional materials for the teachers and also for students are developed and distributed through this site for primary school and for junior high school and senior high school. Now, the second topic is the digital textbook. It has been around for the last 8 years, and this project is under the umbrella of SMART Education. SMART is abbreviation of self-directed, motivated, adaptive, resource-enriched, technology-embedded. So if we are successful with this SMART Education, we are very smart by now. But as you can tell, very ambitious goal that SMART Education has. So we started with 5 projects for SMART Education 8 years ago. Now we focus on digital textbook solely. It doesn't mean necessarily that we give up other rest 4 projects, but those other 4 projects are embedded in digital textbook approach. Free semester means you as a student and teachers are free from the exams. In Korea, all the students have to take midterm exam and semester exam. So you have to prove how much you achieved in your academic domain. And then that score and the activities during the semester is accumulated and show your performance when you go to the university. So it is very important for them to be concerned of their performance level. So if you are given free time, free means without a test, you can do whatever you want. That is like a very innovative approach. And this approach was introduced 3 years ago, so the students can explore their career paths, their interests, their hobbies through one semester-long period of time. So you can follow the track, which was developed already by the teacher or the school, or you can develop your own path. So it can provide you the opportunity to enhance and create your creativity, character building, social skills, and self-directed learning skills. Now, this free semester is introduced at the seventh graders. Seventh graders can have this one test-free semester time, and then after one semester of time, they theoretically go back to the existing curriculum. But after you experience heaven, can you go back to the past? That's the whole purpose of providing this opportunity. We do not ask schools to be innovative and to be more creative in pedagogy and in a curriculum operation. We just provide the opportunity, and you experience it, and you practice your own creativity as a teacher and students. Now, after one semester experience, what will you do? So that's a very big challenge for middle school teachers and students. Now, this practice of free semester has been so successful that now the pilot schools are 50% of the all the schools in the nation. So next year, from next year, this semester will be provided to the whole nation. So the program for free semester education will require curriculum redesign. So the students will be put in center. The instruction is very geared for student-centered instruction. In the morning, usually the subjects are taught, the regular conventional core subjects are taught, but the pedagogy is 1 minute. Okay. I can be fast. In the morning, the regular curriculum will be introduced with a very innovative pedagogy. But in the afternoon, that's where the whole cream comes. So in the afternoon, they explore many different things. So this is many websites and communities support this approach, and this is just one of the community where the experts and communities and industries, they put their names so that students from middle school can come and experience their work, their professionalism. So the whole country is really supportive to this approach. Okay, I'm done. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. I'm Leng Kai Wu from Singapore. So I'm glad to be here to try to introduce some Singapore experience to you in terms of digitalization in learning. Okay, so the title is about driving for 21st century learning, the Singapore experience. Okay, so the first issue is that how we can define the 21st century of knowledge. Okay, how we can arrive at that. And actually, Singapore have given an answer. It is for the 21st century of learning is main on the self-direct learning and collaborative learning. So that's the key domain Singapore has identified for the students. Okay, and for this kind of change to 21st century learning, we actually also feel kind of the international drive for this. So it means that we need a change of assessment of learning. It's not just mainly on the exam marks, right? It should be have some new way of assessment for the new learning. Okay, and we think that PISA could be as an indication of the changing of to be used to assess the new learning. Okay, for different countries, we can see actually there are different levels, different national efforts for the new learning trajectory. We can see in Finland, there's a Finable here. In United States, the P21 or NAEP, there are several different national efforts in achieving for the new learning or for the 21st century learning. Okay, and for this kind of so, what about Singapore? Singapore has kind of going and went through a different phases. Okay, and it comes from the old days of the survival-driven phase when the Singapore just began. You know, the Singapore actually was it was established in 1965. Okay, so that's the survival-driven phase, and now it comes to a new phase, that we are coping with the future challenges for the Singapore education. And then the Ministry of Education has provided three major master plans, MP1, MP2, MP3, to cope different challenges at different phases. And currently we are at the phase of MP3. Actually, the ministry has already provided the plan for the MP4, but it is not officially disclosed yet. Okay, and now you can see for the survival-driven phase, it's really driven by economic exigency, it's centralized, it's education by drill and practice, okay? And for the phase two, it's really try to enhance the technical skills, try to provision of technical expertise, because at that time, actually not the people or the teachers have the expertise to do this kind of learning. Okay, they need to be trained, in terms of technical expertise. And then, towards the 21st century learning, so we recognize the need for teacher professional learning, okay? So that's why we, from NIE, so NIE is actually the only teacher education institute in Singapore, so we are supposed to train the teachers across Singapore and try to them to prepare better for the future challenges. Okay? So this is the whole plan, the whole map of how this kind of master plans for ICT has grown over time. Okay, so that's the big picture. For the small picture, okay, for NIA, for the institute, so we collaborate very closely with the ministry and the schools. Okay, we have really established a very, very good triangle collaboration in terms of educational research in trying to preparing for the 21st century learning. Okay, and our goal is not try to, actually it's not just for innovations. We are really working towards to create new pedagogies or new curriculum. The question is that how this kind of innovation can be really embedded in daily schools. I think that's the key challenge we are facing, and we are really working on that. And the other issue is that actually for the innovation, for the whatever the new media, you can say YouTube, whatever the new media, actually it provides the channel for informal learning. So it means that we need to link the formal learning and informal learning in and outside schools. So this is the major issues we are coping with in our educational research in Singapore. Okay, and this is a map of Singapore, and you can see how this kind of NIE's research has been put across the whole Singapore education systems, the schools. Okay, you can see that it has been done in terms of basic research and the intervention research, and it has been spread across the whole Singapore. Okay, so this is a example I have been working with in the last few years. So you can see how a certain innovation, so-called SIMS learning, so it means that the students can use the mobile devices to help them to learn science. So it means that the mobile devices is not just used for, so it means that the teachers are trained how to embed the mobile devices in their routine teaching. How can this kind of mobile device, because we develop, there's a platform that can use as a portal for students. Students can log in and they can record their learning, they can take pictures, they can create some artifacts on the mobile devices to change the way of inquiry, to really do the inquiry based on learning in and outside the classroom. And we can see how this innovation has evolved during the next about I think 9 years, and has been really been introduced across schools, because we have a teacher community and we can see the growth of teacher community. Okay, this is another so this is innovation created in IE. So the okay, sure. I think I have enough time. Okay, for this innovation, this is a statecraft X. This is created by one NIE researcher. So it is meant to establish a game-based citizen education, because you know the citizen education actually is also identified as a key area for Singapore citizens. So they create such an environment, and you can see how students can use their mobile phones to take the role as the policymakers, and then they can know how to do the national governance on the mobile devices. So this is just one example. Okay, for what I mean by this kind of informal learning spaces, informal learning settings, so that's I call it as the how we can really try to bridge formal and informal learning, okay? And this scenario is just like the students can use Arduino to do the PyNet, to do a circuit, PyNet circuit, okay? They can try to establish or create some new, like for example, robots, cars, whatever, so they can create based on their learning, their interest, because we can see, based on our observation or based on our interventions, we can see how students can use the afternoon time of this in the CCA, extra curriculum activities, or the STEM, their STEM applied learning programs. They have been using their time in the school, try to working on that, and they can build some new or underwater robots or the cars, and then they can do the race. So that's the thing they can do. So this is interest-driven, hands-on, and creativity-oriented activities. Okay, so we are also working on the computational thinking for secondary school students. So there's a plan, so it will be also a formal computing curriculum in 2018. So that will be a key area has been identified by the government, that I see this kind of coding skill actually is very key for the students. Okay, so this is the one area. Okay, so to sum up, so we can see there is a trend in Singapore, there is an interest-driven learning environment in school settings, okay? We are really trying to arouse students' creativity based on all this kind of active settings, and we want to bridge formal and informal learning, and we are convinced that every student can achieve at high levels if we can provide them more opportunities or a variety of possibilities. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next we will travel to Hong Kong. I have always difficulties with your name, but I'll try. Dr. Yuen.
Yes.
And Vera will have time for you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Yuen Mi from the University of Hong Kong. Today, I will talk to you about two directions. The first one is self-directed learning in science, which is more focused at classroom level. The second one is e-learning in informal, formal, and open learning contexts. For the self-directed learning in science, because our governments also emphasize the 21st century skills for nurturing our next generation, so that self-directed learning, it is very important. In our university, we have a 3 years project with primary schools and secondary schools, teachers and students. It is about how to engage self-directed learning in science in the classroom levels. As you can see that the project includes co-planning with the teachers. The teachers come to the university as a whole group and then discuss the curriculum, and then our officer also go to the schools to have a co-planning sessions with those teachers. And teachers in the cluster group, they are encouraged to go to other schools to have some lesson observation, because we find that through the lesson observation, it really helps the teachers' professional development. And then you can see that this one, it is the classroom lesson observation. Students are doing their scientific investigation. For this one, it is the small electric fence. And then we also have teachers' networkings. You can see that some teachers sharing. We also invite some scholars to talk about what about the STEM educations and others' inquiry approach, how to have a self-directed learning in this one. And then you can see that there are teachers discussing, and there is a large seminar. Teachers, after the teachers' observation, we also provide debriefing sessions for teachers to discuss and how to improve the lessons. However, we find that there is challenges to teachers' professional learning, because we ask teachers to teach self-directed learning, but how teachers can do that, it is a question. Teachers also need to learn self-directed learning. We find that if teachers are designing the curriculum, he or she is actually the designer of the learning. But right now, we do not have a tool for teachers as a profession to do it. From other professions, such as architecture, they have their own software for them to develop. But right now, for the teachers, we don't have it. And the second one is how we can capture teachers' curriculum development and thinking and share the pedagogy with in the school and across the school. This is a kind of problem we want to solve. And apart from this, we would like to develop a learning design language and learning design tool for teachers to share amongst the education professions. So that right now I'm going to introduce to you the Learning Design Studio. This tool, it is for teachers to develop their curriculum planning and share among teachers, among their pedagogies, and also create cumulative exemplars for teachers, as well as for them to have some reflective thinking for their curriculum design. And you can see that on the step one, you can see, for example, I'm the one who import. There is several good exemplar in it. Here is the author, and then this is the name of the patent, Digital Journey 12. And you can select other patterns from here. There is already some patterns you can select and adopt in it. And then here is the detail. This is the subject, the grade levels, and the number of lessons. As well as our project is focused on self-directed learning. So that you can see there is a learning outcome and assessment, and also this focus on self-directed learning. We have defined 5 stages for self-directed learning. When you mouse over it, you can see some hints for teachers to designing their activities. And then this is also some pedagogical prompt for teachers when they are devising the curriculums. And then here you can see that this is what actually goes into the classroom. They have designed the activities in this. This is list of tools and activities. And then here it is how you can design each activities with some learning tool in it. And is it a group activities and how you can arrange it. And then you can see that there is a pie chart for teachers to reflect how my lessons it is distributed. Is it mainly the lecture type, or we have a peer-to-peer evaluations, investigation activities, or some reportings for teachers? If you change here, you can see that there is a minute right here. You change the minutes, the pie chart actually reflects the time of change. Apart from this, it also have a donut chart, we call it. it is show that the time distribution across the classroom or after the classroom, whether it is online or offline activity, so that teachers can very easily to see it. And then this is the actual radios, and I can show you some. Right. Here it is. You can see create my new design. And then you can see this. And I can load what actually already in the design. For example, it is project learning. Yes, you can see that this is all input in it already existing. And then here it is also when you are doing some learning outcomes, sometimes teachers do not know what is the high level. It has some wording for the broomstick sonnet for the highest levels in it. And when you mouse over it, we can see that there is goal setting. It is some prompt in it. Apart from this, we also want to notice that the learning outcome, how the student can be doing, we can also have... the assessment rubric right here so that teachers can very easily to see in the goal setting which levels they are aiming to go at it. And then for the step two, you can see the donut chart. For example, I change this one to 20 minutes. And then you can see the donut chart is changing, right? And for the other one, we are still developing it, is that apart from the electronic versions, sometimes it also includes blended learning. Here we attach this learning outcome part for teachers to upload those student artifacts to the platform for the sharing purposes, not only or the online thing, but also the offline thing. This is what it is about, the learning design studios. Okay. So. And then the second one, it is, yes, for the e-learning, formal and informal open learning, this is the studies we commissioned by our governments to talk about what is the future direction that Hong Kong should go. The first one, it is for the formal learning one. It is from kindergarten to K-12, how this e-learning can be done in the school. Another one, it is for the open learning content. It is for the adult education. What kind of challenges and tension that Hong Kong government are facing at? For the last one, you can see that it is the senior citizen. We think that it is not only for the child, but also the senior citizen. If they have a good lifelong learning, they need not to be neglected. So that what happens to the elderly and what kind of strategies we need to encourage our governments to do. Here it is our research questions and objectives. And our report just released. You can download the leaflet in this website. Yes. I'm finished. Thank you very much. Yeah.
International experts. So my name is Päivi Häkkinen. I have been working in the area of learning, learning technologies, learning environments, and in particular computer-supported collaborative learning. And already on the basis of these three presentations, I picked very interesting, very innovative ideas that I think that we also share many of the timely challenges in Finnish context. And I tried to check whether we have something that puzzles you in the audience. And if we start from the South Korean presentation, and there was a very intriguing idea of a free semester. And I think that there was some reflections from a Finnish context that we quite often think that seventh graders in Finland are not necessarily ready to take responsibility for making decisions or planning their career yet. So I wonder whether there's some big cultural difference in this question. How would you comment?
I respond from here. Or? Okay.
Yes, seventh graders are only 13 years old. They are not mature enough to make some significant decisions for their own career life. But we couldn't practice this policy for the senior high school students, because senior high school students are really near to the university entrance time. And university entrance is the most important decision in students' life. So that's too risky to do that at that stage. So instead, the first year of the seventh graders, that was the most safe time. So this is only for the practicality, not for the ideal time schedule. So very sorry about that, but not very creative answer.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. But could you still comment a bit on, I was especially interested in the role of computational thinking in your curriculum. Mm. You were also giving two different types of models, and the integrated approach, and as a specific subject, the role of computational thinking. But if you think a bit more specifically, do you have any directions on when you take the computer and technology when the kids are small?
Mm.
When you do it without that technology, with the first graders, when you take the visual programming languages with you, when you deal with the robotics, for example, so do you have any clear directions in this sense?
Yes, we do have all that subjects, all that themes in computational thinking. For primary school kids, we try to produce more tangible objects that they can clarify and testify their symbolic thinking, which is like a very often coding. Coding is very abstract thinking, but they can visualize their thinking with using the very simple code programs like a Scratch, or they can use robotics, very simple robots that they can play with a coding, and some of the other subjects, other components that they can make sign, you know, the flashing signs. So we try to combine many tangible objects as many as possible for the primary school students. And for the primary school students, we have a home economics and technology subject, and that subject has a one chapter solely for the computational thinking. But other subject areas and after-school activities and club activities, we provide opportunities as well. So primary school kids can experience this computational thinking, and junior high school students, they all have to take coding class. For higher senior high school, we provide opportunity, but they are, again, very geared for entering the university, elite university, so they don't pay, they do not have the flexibility to experience computational thinking as much as they wish. That's the reality.
If you in the audience have something in your mind, although not putting there, just raise your hands. But what I also picked as a very... Yes, please.
Not those people from the industries, no, because they have the privilege that they don't have to take pedagogy training before they go into the school. But they bring a lot of good knowledge in computation, very good resources with them. And they bring the resources, the books and activity sheets, which are developed with pedagogy experts. So they are not just jumping into the school without any background in education. Sort of, they bring that pedagogy background with them.
During the last two presentations, I found myself thinking about one particular issue that we have very timely in Finnish schools and particularly in the context of new curriculum, which is the assessment. And assessment practices are something that very strongly guide the development of pedagogy and pedagogically innovative practices. You actually all talked or at least mentioned 21st century skills, critical thinking, self-regulated learning or self-directed learning, collaborative learning, problem solving, and so on. And at least we are at the moment working very much on how to assess some kind of generic skills instead of just focusing on knowledge and routine type of narrow, easily measurable skills, and how to assess something as complex as you do, for example, in a seamless learning mobile projects. And at least I have many questions in my mind. Who assesses, in which ways, formative, summative? What is the role of technology, actually, in the assessment itself? Can it provide some even big data? So actually, this is a question for both you and you, if you allow, even though you talked about the design studio thing, I saw that there were very interesting options for the assessment, and I assume that you have been thinking about this. And I think this is a very culture-sensitive issue as well, because in Finland we have a very strong autonomy that Finnish teachers have in their classroom, and this has impact on assessment. So this is my last question. So yeah. If you very shortly.
I think this is also a very hard question. Actually, assessment of the 21st century skill is still ongoing process. So we can see that it is really have a lot of discussions on the topic in the literature, and it has definitely not ended. So in terms of Sims Learning we have done, we have also tried to combine the traditional way. We still use the traditional way of assessment based on their exams. We can see, because we still use the data from the exams to see the difference between the pre and the post. So that's especially for those so-called open-ended questions. Because during the process of simple learning, we can see that students can actually have more opportunities to express their thinking using the mobile devices, because they can draw the artifacts, they can draw something to exhibit their understanding. So based on this kind of trailing during the whole semester, so then this result can be shown their answering of those open-ended questions. Then we compare the result to the experiment and the control class, we can see the students in the experiment class have shown some more understandings. They are more likely to elaborate what has been asked in those open-ended questions. So that's one way. It's not complete, but it's also one way. And then the other, we can also analyze the artifacts they have, because they can draw some animations to show some trajectories of how, for example, a growth of a plant, okay, to show that, and then it can show as an animation shown in that smartphone. So we can analyze their artifacts. So that's also one way to see their so-called creativity. Okay, so this is artifact analyzing. So that's okay. So it's still also one way. So here I cannot provide you a full or the complete answer, but I can try myself.
Yeah, yes. I don't know the answer by myself either.
We can continue with questions also, as I mentioned, they are all hopefully available in our EduVerse platform. So if you thank you, baby. And now we have three more presentations, and first, I would like to welcome Dr. Kashim Al-San from United Arab Emirates University.
Thank you, Maria. Salaam alaikum. Hey. Hi. So in three different languages, Finnish, Arabic, and English. I'm glad to have you in my presentation. I'll go to the airport right now. You are in the same plane. We will move from the eastern part of Asia to the middle part of Asia. And next, we will move to the western part of Europe. And I'm glad that to introduce my country first, to give you some information. I know maybe some of you, they don't know too much about UAE. This is my assumption, so I want to have this kind of shared background. As you know, the name of my country, United Arab Emirates, the capital, Abu Dhabi, member population, it's 13 million. And like 5 years ago, it was 8 million. So it's like expanding too much, not due for the, Emirates population, but related to the immigrants low-level workers who try to work over there. And the Emirates by themselves, they are about just 1 million. And this is a big challenge for the Emirates society. The education system in Abu Dhabi is a centralized education system run by, nowadays, they hired in the new cabinet 3 ministers of education. And this is maybe the only part of the board they have this kind. And we have 7 emirates, and we have educational council. We have Ministry of Education who are in charge of education. And you can see, like, education is free at all levels from K through 20, okay? Unless if you go to the graduate studies, you need to pay for your education. This is for Emirates students. For non-Emirates, you need to pay for that. And the total number of students is close to 1 million students. You can see the difference, like 13 million to 1 students, because mostly they are expatriates and they don't have their families with them. So this might give us also some complication in our context. And you can see the total number of public schools, 710, and private school is 459. And the most amazing part in our education system, we have a very huge curricula. We have diverse curricula. We have the national curricula, and we have the international curricula, American, European, Pakistanis, Indian, and so on. ICT in education, and I would like to share with you this, like the government in UAE, they are way advanced compared to the education system and compared to the teachers and compared to the school levels. So the infrastructure is way advanced, the wireless, the internet, the airplanes, all of these. So we have good investment in infrastructure, but actually this is not reflected in the proper way in the education systems when it comes to the school. And this is also doesn't reflect in our students' achievement because we have high technology, and the main big problem in our context, like teachers, some of them, they are not well prepared, and I can figure out the percentage is about 50%, and some of them, they are not convincing of using smart technology in teaching and learning, so we need to educate, to prepare teachers, to run maybe heavily professional development programs for them, and the government, they are working hard to have smart government, smart cities, and the good example of this is Dubai, and I guess most of you maybe are familiar with Dubai, so you can run most of your business through your mobile. You don't need to go here and there. Now we will move to the smart schools and to the smart learning initiatives and the university. My university, particularly United Arab Emirates, it's highly involved in this issue. You can see from this, now we have like a platform that run by Ministry of Education, by Education Council, and the schools they can use. We have like an universe platform for public and private school in Abu Dhabi, and Abu Dhabi Education Council is in charge of that. They offer good resources for the teachers. They offer e-curriculum, e-boxes, i-boxes, and e-resources. All of these are free for teacher to use, but in reality, the level of using ICT in teaching and learning particularly is still we need to do too many things in order to be on the advanced level. And you can see, from the pictures, we have like different snapshots from, school levels and from university levels. And after that, I'll go to the SysTech project, and really we have this kind of collaboration, and we benefit too much from that, especially the networking, collaborating with other internationals. And you can see, as part of SysTech project, we invited our Finnish experts to come to the UAE, conduct training courses over there, and it was very productive. We have good collaboration, and also we had a conference, and we have a Skype conference presentation, and Tina was one of them, so we need to give her a big hi and big thanks for this. And a Finnish teacher, Hanu, I think his name, the Finnish teacher, the chemistry teacher, Hanu is here. Okay, also we need to give him a hand. He was great. And also I want to give a hand to Sanna from University of Helsinki. She visited us, and we have this kind of collaboration. Yargo. Yargo is here. Do you see Yargo? This is the gentleman. I and Yargo conducted a training course over there. So I'm glad that I'm seeing you again here, okay? Because I learned he moved to other work, and he did a great job with us in United Arab Emirates, and he experienced the temperature during May month, and he can tell you about all of this issue. And in this training course, the most important thing that we evaluate Finnish learning solutions, and it was, I think, 10 learning solutions. It was evaluated according to the SysTech standards and the criteria, and by the end, We educate our faculty members at the university, our master and graduate students, our teachers, and ourselves how to adapt these learning solutions to match with our context. I'll speed in a minute. And this is the kind of networking that came out as a result of this tech project, and I appreciate this kind of collaboration, and we are looking to expand this for new projects in the future. And I guess we need to give special thanks for Maria. She did a great job in that, really. And she managed run our business in the proper way. And this is the scheme out snapshots from CISTIC activities that we did in Helsinki maybe 3 years ago and last year. And this is from school visits from like the year before and from yesterday. And it was like effective school visits, especially when we visited a comprehensive school yesterday. It is one of the wonderful schools that is highly prepared to match the needs of special needs students, especially disabled students. And they are doing a great job over there. Thank you for listening.
Good afternoon to the audience. Let me show you that I'm also proficient in Finnish. So, hey, this is not working. Is this working? Now, okay. So, hey, my name is Maria Sancho. I come from Barcelona, Universitat Politécnica de Catalunya, Barcelona Tech, and also Barcelona Supercomputing Center. As you can see, my profile is in computer science, but thanks to different circumstances in my life, my interest moved to education and more specifically to learning analytics. So I have to tell you that I'm proud of a long tradition on good teaching in my region, in Barcelona and Catalonia. I have to tell you that in my country, Finland is the reference, the example to follow. So I'm much more ready to learn than to teach today. So I'm happy to be here and happy to contribute with that small presentation. Right? I've been asking to explain you the case of Spain. And I think that it worth to explain some characteristics of the Spanish educational system so as to understand what's happening. In Spain, education is mainly public. If you take into account first primary, secondary, and vocational school, almost 70% are public schools financed by Spanish government. And another 25% is a kind of private-public funding system. This system is especially relevant in some areas like Catalonia, where I come from, right? So most of the schools follow this scheme where parents and the autonomous government shares the funding of the school. And only 6% are private schools. In higher education, the situation is the same or even more in the side of public funding. I tell you that because the policies derived from our government have a lot of impact on how we teach and the amount of resources that we are allowed to spend in every case, right? Another aspect that I think that is relevant is that in Spain we have 5 official languages plus Spanish. This has impact when you try to develop virtual learning environments or when you try to develop contents, because you have to develop the contents in every single official language, because these languages are in the same equal situation than Spanish at every school. So it's a challenge. It's not a problem. It's a challenge. Okay, just to make a short resume, because I'm speechless, so I will try to be quite fast. Public policies for funding education, funding ICT in education, started in Spain around the 80s with two projects that were called Atenea and Mercurio. But that time, they were simply providing schools with computers for mainly for science laboratories and very basic software that was available at that time. And also they spent some money to develop and to buy some audiovisual contents and systems. In the 90s, the governance of education, the responsibility for education, was moved from the central government to the autonomous regions. You know, Spain is divided into 25 autonomous regions, and then the responsibility for education moved from the central government to the autonomous regions. In this sense, what happened at this moment is that some of the regions, mainly Andalusia, Catalonia, País Vasco, this is Galicia, Canary Islands, and Valencia, that were the most active communities, started a kind of joint program between the communities and the central government, mainly to train teachers in the use of ICT, to produce educational software, to start some innovation projects, and some equipment was bought by this time. And something that has been very innovative at that time was to start exploring how IT could support students with special needs. Okay. In the current century, if you look at the titles of the programs and the policies, you will see what has happened. Internet in the school, then internet in the classroom, then school 2.0, and then digital culture in the school. This is the path that has been followed during the current century. So the policies have launched many programs to give continuity to the efforts, to the investments done previously. But what is critical here, and I think that it has been a very good policy, is to establish a standard of interoperability between the different systems and standards of use of the different systems, right? They strengthen sharing contents through this standardization, sharing methods and experience between the different autonomous communities, right? So very briefly, the first program, Internet in the School, was developed to equipment and connectivity to some educational applications and training and contents. If you look at the amount invested in each part, you will clearly see that the big amount, the big piece of the cake, was for equipment and for connectivity. They bought a lot of personal computers and they provide a lot of schools with internet. Every school with broadband, local area network in every school connecting all computers inside the school. And they installed a lot of support services. It was that the time also to start developing some websites for a school, some educational contents, and teachers start to be trained in a systematic way. The next program, Internet in the Classroom, was also an important program. 10,000 schools were covered with a lot of PCs, printers, digital blackboards, projectors. A lot of students were benefit, more than 2 million, and a lot of teachers. The key issue, the key thing here, what I want to mention here, is the development of the platform, the Agora, the Agrega platform, where teachers start to share contents and contributions. Okay. So then the project, the School 2.0, it's an improvement of this platform, and one computer per children policy allowed to fund almost all children with a computer in the class. Then digital culture in the school was a meta repository, improving the previous one, but I wanted to go to the, to these figures at the very end. After all in all, if you look at the infrastructures provided, Spain is very well situated, very well located, compared with other European countries. You can see Spain, it's very near to Sweden or Finland, and behind France or Belgium, and over the European average. If you look at the percentage of students that are following their studies in a very good equipped school, Spain is very well located, right? Very well situated. But if you look at the real use that teachers do of ICT in Spain, you will see that only 27% of teachers in Spain use ICT in at least 25% of their classes, right? Some of the issues is that that have been raised by teachers is that they do not see how they can integrate smoothly ICTs in their classes. And what is more, even more important, they believe that the evidence that increased use of ICT in classrooms provides better school performance is still missing. Right? I think that this is something that we can discuss here. Thank you.
Late. 5 minutes late of our schedule, but still we will have one stop. We will fly from Spain to Chile. How many hours does it take?
34. Yeah.
So, Jenny, but please welcome Dr. Enrique.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me well? I'm very glad to be here. Thank you much, very much for the invitation. I will try to present better than the image because it got crowded. I will be brief, but I will don't leave. I will be very brief. So, just a snapshot of the educational system in Chile. You can read there. Also, what is not written there is that you are in a top 10 position in PISA results, etc. We are in the top 50 at the bottom of that. So the difference is quite huge. So we have many, many challenges, especially in terms of equity in education. And we hope ICD can make a contribution to that. In terms of the ICT educational policy, supposed to be different areas, you cannot read that, right? Okay, never mind. We started in 1992 with enlaces, means links in Spanish, in 1992, and from then it started as a pilot project, and then we were able to take this initiative as a national policy, and around 2004 we reached with computers and internet and so on to almost all the schools in the country, and from there we started to think about how to improve the use of the equipment, so and also continuing with the more rural areas. So the situation now is that approximately 96% of the schools have internet connection. The ones that do not have internet is because they are rural schools. Obviously, they need it more than all the other schools, but that's the problem. All of them have some kind of computers, computer labs, projectors, etc. I would say 90% of the teachers have computers also and use them somehow. And we do have the digital educational resources and so on. But today, what the ICT education policy is doing is to... Yeah, never mind. Ensure internet connectivity to all these remote schools, renew the equipment, because after 10 years you need to have new computers, etc. So it's an continuous investment. They also provide professional development courses for teachers. And we started three years ago, more or less, to provide tablets to the preschools and first graders to the schools. So they have 3-4 tablets to use them in the classroom. Last year, the ministry started to provide one laptop per child to each 7th grader, trying to see what happens with that. And they also are providing ICT-related courses for students to engage them in different activities which are extracurricular, like building robots, playing with Lego, that kind of things. So here it comes. So you see, what we have done was messed, but the challenges are clear in terms of the presentation. I would talk, although we have to have many challenges in education in Chile and so on, and obviously in Latin America, and in other developing countries or more developed. But I will talk about two main challenges. Digital competences for students and teachers, and something that I call the digital context, or which is somehow making us to think differently or to needing to do something differently. Let's start with this, digital competences. What do we mean with this? Because generally you talk about digital competence, and what teachers understand in Chile is that they have to use the computer. So if you sit in front of a computer, yes, you can use Word, you can use PowerPoint, you can use the internet somehow, etc. That's the basic ICT skills here. But what we are thinking of, well, that's one area. The other area, people talk about 21st century skills, which are in general quite abstract. Collaboration, problem solving, etc., which are being tried to address by the curriculum for almost, many years. And it's quite hard to operationalize them in a quite specific area from a digital point of view. So we defined what we call digital skills for learning, which is something in between. So you think of this very high-level competences, very operational, functional competences, and in between there is a set of competences that studies like the ICLS study or others are addressing, which means to be very effective and efficient in searching for information on the internet, to have very good presentation skills, to be able to communicate in an effective way, etc. That type of competences has, we started in Chile 6 years ago measuring them and looking at how the Chilean students were in that type of competences. After that, the international study ICLS came and showed us that only 1 in 5 student is capable to work independently with ICT, select, retrieve, aggregate information, etc. Internationally, that's not a national result, that's international. In Chile, it's 1 in 10. So this shows, this was also confirmed somehow with the PISA 2012 results, which about digital reading. So, and also has been confirmed by many pieces of research that show that students cannot really use the internet properly. I have 2.5 minutes left, right?
Which is 30 seconds.
Good. So my point is that independently of the country, we do have a problem, okay? If you compare, well, that's Chile here, that's supposed to be Korea, Thailand international results, okay? And this is level 4 and above, up, level 3 and below. And this is what I said here, what is written there, is when you reach level 3, you from level 4 upwards, you can do that. So my claim here is that although we think the digital natives are there, present in the society, etc., that's, from an educational point of view, it's not true. Students need to be taught how to use the internet as well as teachers. And that's something we're trying to face, to address. The other thing is that many people say that teachers and students do not use the internet to learn, or ICT in general. And when you look at the time that teachers use the computer in the classroom, at least in Chile, perhaps not in Finland, based on what we saw yesterday, they use it very little really. And in general, in Europe, is that the situation? Teachers use ICT very low frequency in the classroom. But outside the classroom, that's the situation that both teachers and students are using a lot of ICT. More, furthermore, what teachers do with the ICT to teach is more or less similar to what students do with the computers to learn. So we have a powerful relation there in terms of saying, okay, if you enhance what teachers do, you can eventually change what students do. Therefore, we think, this is one more slide, therefore we think that the traditional question of how to use ICT to transform education is no longer valid, because you are trying to take this external object, ICTs, into the classroom. But what should be done is to recognize, that's my timing, recognize that the digital environment context is there, and we need to answer how to teach and learn in this transformed digital context. So that's the question we're trying to face now in the Chilean ICT education policy. Thank you very much.
I'll start anyway. Thank you very much to our international guests. Next, we will have coffee right there at the lobby and EduFest. And now, I'm sorry, I'll switch to Finnish. So, 13.30-15.30 kestää EduFest. No, ollaan vähän sen puolella. Tässä samalla aluksi on kahvit ja sitten loppupuolella on varhaiskasvattajille EHIPSU-symposium tässä huoneessa. Mutta EduFest tapahtuu tässä meidän Agoran aulassa ja tuolla Alfa-luentosalissa, johon on paljon opasteita tuossa matkalla, se on aivan vieressä. Siellä on yhteensä 30 esittelypistettä, ne on yrityksiä, julkisia organisaatioita, kaiken näköisiä innovaatioita digitaalisen oppimisen saralla. Alfassa ne esittelypisteet osallistuu tämmöiseen äänestykseen, missä voitte valita teidän omasta mielestä kaikkein parhaan esittelypisteen. Ja noi perintöprinsessat voidaan valita myös. Siellä on olemassa tabletteja, mutta voitte käyttää myös te omia laitteita. Täällä on noissa EduFestin julisteissa toi QR-koodi, mikä nytkin näkyy tuossa kalvolla. Ja EduFestin aikana vielä, jos ette tuossa äsken ilmoittautumisen yhteydessä ilmoittautunut huomiseen työpajoihin, niin tuossa infopisteellä voi laittaa nimensä listaan huomista varten. Kiitoksia mun puolesta ja nähdään kahvella ja EduFestillä ihan hetken päästä.